All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, August 1st, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a balmy 76 degrees, somewhat humid, and partly sunny here in upstate New York. It is a perfect summer day. So where do we leave off on Friday? Can't believe it's August already. Summer has just flown right by. We titled the show, RFID Employees, Parasitic Robots, RC Turtles, and Optical Tweezers. And what's pretty interesting is as we do the show on a daily or recently weekly basis, we are discovering, just like I said, that this is happening and moving forward way faster than we ever imagined. I mean, optical tweezers literally using beams of light, like little tractor beams, to grab very small little things. I don't remember what they were talking about in that story, but they were manipulating things on a level that they had never imagined possible. And we're getting to the point now where they are tinkering around with the human genome. We've talked about CRISPR endlessly for the last few years. Well, guess what happened on the 26th of July? I found this right after the show on Friday. First human embryo edited in the United States. You knew it was coming. We thought it was going to be a Penu. They had talked about that, and we covered a few stories about that, but I guess that did not happen. This apparently happened in Oregon, July 26, 2017, out of MIT Technology Review. The first known attempt at creating genetically modified human embryos in the United States, because we have to keep up with China, has been carried out by a team of researchers in Portland, Oregon. The effort, led by Sukrat Mitalibilov, something like that, of Oregon Health and Science University, involved changing the DNA of a large number of one-cell embryos with the gene editing technique called CRISPR, according to people familiar with the scientific results, but we can't tell you who they are. Until now, American scientists have watched with a combination of awe, envy, and some alarm as scientists elsewhere, like China, were the first to explore this controversial practice. But to date, three previous reports, I only knew of two, of editing human embryos were all published by scientists in China. Now, Mitalibilov is believed to have broken new ground in the number of embryos experimented upon. I wonder where he got those from. And by demonstrating that it is possible to safely, right, because we have to make sure that stock price of CRISPR Therapeutics goes up, and efficiently correct effective genes that cause inherited diseases. Now, we found a story a while back, and I have seen in some of the investment literature that they have jumped all over that original study that said that there were 1,500 plus off-target genetic mutations that happened in one simple mouse where they were looking to genetically edit a inherited blindness disorder. And these were all off-target mutations that they hadn't expected. And it threw a wrench into the stock price of investments of people like Georgie Porgy Church. Well, anyway, so let's read this story because this is pretty horrifying. This has happened on the homeland. Although none of the embryos were allowed to develop for more than a few days, phew, just like in the UK, there was never any intention of implanting them into a womb. Remember, they have artificial wombs now, too, so you can get around that little ethical right turn. And these experiments are a milestone on what may prove to be an inevitable journey toward the birth of the first genetically modified humans. Now, interestingly enough, we closed the show out on Friday with a story titled, Are We Becoming More Stupid? There was, and I would have to agree with that. I didn't need to see any charts or downward trajectories, but they had looked across the board at IQ tests, and they found that they've been falling in the Western world. That was along with another story that we had discovered that just came out, and now it's been saturated all over the media, how the sperm count is dropping in the Western world. Well, guys, I hate to tell you, but anyone who has been a student of history or a student of sociology and has kind of spent time looking at the human condition, you would know that any time that population starts to fall, as well as intelligence, and then we have this whole other thing going on with artificial intelligence that is just steaming forward and beating the smarty pants of different fields, taking over white-collar jobs like cancer doctor or lawyer. It was Ross using IBM Watson. And eventually, I'm still going to predict presidents and military and this whole industrialized automation that's happening, these smart artificial intelligences. You have to kind of think back to what happens anytime a more intelligent, stronger population comes into contact with a weaker one. And typically, it ends up that they are either conquered or slaughtered throughout history. History always repeats itself. So this worries me a great deal to kind of read this type of stuff and then to take a look at the fact that now they are coming up with problem, reaction, solution. Of course, it's going to start out being to cure genetic disorders. But later, if you got the money, and we know there are lots of rich people out there who are all about finding ways to live forever. We've covered that extensively as well. We're going to think about this and find out that it's not going to turn out in the best for the human race. Human 2.0 are going to be designer humans. Your children will be able to have traits that you pick off a checklist. You know, you want them to be smart. You want them to be blonde. You want them to be as perfect as possible, able to pass down perfected genomes. And then put them in a bubble so they don't have any stress and they don't eat any junk food. I just saw a story, and honestly, guys, I was having trouble putting together tabs today because I had tabs already from Friday where I was going down a particular vein, but then I kind of changed my mind. I wanted to go someplace else here. Talking about, like, bad food. And again, I think this is all by design. They wanted this to happen. You needed a good excuse to be able to utilize these technologies. Well, listen to this about bad food. A team of scientists, of course, global warming, has just made food from electricity. And, of course, it could be the solution to world hunger. So no more test tube meat or exercising little muscle cells in a petri dish. Oh, no. A Finnish team of researchers has taken a step toward the future of food, which always scares the pants off of me, being a picky eater since I was a kid. I don't want future food. To produce food from electricity. And if it scales up and proves to be successful, it could be a tool to fight against world hunger and, of course, climate change. They are now calling this the Electric Bioreactor Farm. Finnish researchers have created a batch of single-cell protein that is nutritious enough to serve for dinner using a system powered by renewable energy. Who would have thunk it? I bet you anything someone like Elon Musk and his big solar battery factory is probably looking at investing in something like this. The entire process requires only electricity, water, carbon dioxide, and microbes, you know, and that just made me realize something. If we think about this, people like Bill Gates have been investing in trying to bring the carbon quotient down to zero. Now, carbon dioxide, they have been squawking for a while. They're saying is a greenhouse gas. But think about this. Carbon dioxide is one of the necessary components for chlorophyll and photosynthesis to fuel, if that's the word. You need carbon dioxide to feed plants, and plants then use that in its process to produce oxygen, which is necessary for the rest of the animal kingdom on Earth to survive. So if we get rid of carbon dioxide, that's going to cause a carbon dioxide shortage now, isn't it? And there have been things out there. I don't know if there was carbon dioxide suckers. I think there was, actually, where they could suck the carbon dioxide out of the air and capture it. There's also oxygen suckers. But listen, what if somebody sucked up all the carbon dioxide and then they could feed it out in little snippets for your little biofield that you're growing for your sustenance of food to be able to grow green plants? What if, you know, another raw material to produce food from electricity would be water? Well, now they have been crying for a while that water is becoming scarce on planet Earth, which is horrifying considering that the majority of life is made up of approximately 70 to 80% of water. And we require water to survive. Water becoming a scarcity would be a big problem. And then, of course, microbes. Well, we know there's microbes everywhere. You have microbes in your gut. There are microbes in the soil. And there's a lot of research going into genetically modifying microbes to turn them into little bioreactors. We've looked at that as well. So back to the story, the synthetic food was created as part of the Food from Electricity Project. Who knew we had one of those? Which is a collaboration between Lappeenranta University of Technology and the VTT, Technical Research Center of Finland. And after exposing the raw materials to electrolysis in a bioreactor, it's just like a little tank, it looks like, the process forms a powder that consists of more than 50% protein, 25% carbohydrates, and this texture can also be changed by altering the microbes used in the production. The next stage, according to Juha Pika Tianchen, the principal scientist at VTT, is to optimize the system because currently a bioreactor the size of a cup of coffee takes about 2 weeks to produce a gram of this protein. Pitakin says that a LUT press release, which is the first university, states, "We are currently focusing on developing the technology, reactor concepts, technologies that improve efficiency, and controlling this process." He predicted it would take about a decade before more efficient incarnations of the system will be widely available. Maybe 10 years is a realistic time frame for reaching commercial capacity in terms of the necessary legislation, wink, and process technology. The potential impact of food using electricity and other widely available raw materials is enormous. Currently, there are two main ways that it could be used. First, is a means of feeding starving people, or like I said, let's flip that around, starving, fed people. You know, if all of a sudden you can't grow green plants, and if you can't drink clean water, and those are raw materials required to produce this newfangled sanctioned green food, and not green as in literally chlorophyll green, green as in not quote-unquote damaging the planet. You can see how they'll be able to charge and be able to hold the reins on the raw materials. So just like genetically modified organisms or seeds that don't reproduce a second generation, where you have to pay licensing fees to get your hands on the seeds every growing season, they will be able to hold the reins and control the population by controlling the way this newfangled solution for world hunger is produced. In the future, this technology can be transported to, for instance, the desert and other areas that are facing famine, providing a source of cheap and nutritious food to those who need it most. The machine also works independently of environmental factors, meaning that it could feed people consistently. Yero Aloha, a professor at LUT, said in the press release that it, quote, does not require location with conditions for agriculture, such as the right temperature, humidity, or a certain soil type. Second, as a means of decreasing global emissions, ding, and reducing the demand for food, that's made out of livestock and crops necessary to feed them. Currently, the meat industry accounts for between 14 and 18% of global emissions of greenhouse gases. Like I said, carbon dioxide has been reclassified as a greenhouse gas. And I'm not going to say that it doesn't maybe contribute at some point to heating the atmosphere, but I hate to tell you, it's not anything that we are doing on the ground necessarily. And I mean me and you that is heating this planet up more than some of the live lab experiments, one of the scientists called it, on the atmosphere to propagate radio waves with things such as atmospheric heaters. I really think that that is probably a large portion of what is going on here. But then they turn around and blame it on you and me and Nana and Johnny and our lifestyle and the way we eat and the way we live and the way we drive with technologies that they have foisted upon us for generations without ever investing in trying to find cleaner, more sustainable processes, right? They could have been investing since the 70s with Three Mile Island and the 80s with Chernobyl. We all knew it was bad then. And the 70s with the I remember because we were really poor. My dad got laid off. He worked in the auto industry, but we had that oil crisis in the 70s and everybody was poor. Well, they should have come up with an alternative way to power vehicles back then. I mean, the 70s literally were 30, 40, 50 years ago. We could have long had something that was profitable and sustainable that didn't cost an arm and a leg by now. Anyway, the Food from Electricity project could decrease the amount of unsustainable farming needed to fill our bellies as it provides us with a smaller, cheaper, and renewable method of getting our nutrients. Yeah, all hail Soylent Green. And other solutions to this problem include, and here we go, ding-a-ling, lab-grown meat. Or, and we've talked about this one as well, insect farming. We found out insects have tons of protein and they're good for you too. No, thank you. Which produces less waste and requires less energy. And just for anyone out there who is considering a cricket farm, we found out that that is already something that is going on in places that are swanky like California. I don't think we have cricket food farms here in New York yet. But having owned a lizard before in my life as a pet, his name was Billy. He was a dwarf tegu. He was pretty cute. I inherited him from a fiance at one point previous to that, but he was my little buddy. But the sad thing about dwarf tegus is that they eat live prey. They hunt. They are related to the monitor family of lizards, and they don't like dead food. They like live food. And so I found out very quickly that going to the pet store every other day to buy 10 or 15 crickets got to be a big pain in the ass at one point. And so very much by accident in the little fish tank, I would buy those crickets and put them in. Very accidentally, one morning I wake up and I'm like, what are all those little bugs? There were bugs all over the inside of the fish tank. And as I looked at them very closely and I got out a magnifying glass, I realized they had little antenna and they were baby crickets and there were millions of them. I had accidentally bred crickets at home. So from that point on, I have my own little cricket farm to feed my lizard. And here's something even sadder, talking about making this protein carbohydrate powder out of electricity. One of the things you had to do for a reptile, and I don't know if it's all reptiles, but at least for dwarf tegus, is they needed to get all their nutrients, and they didn't get all of their nutrients out of the crickets. So you also had to buy this protein powder. So you took the crickets and you grabbed them and you put them into a bag. And then you put a sprinkle or two of this protein powder and shook them up. And then you opened the lid to your lizard tank and you dropped the crickets inside. And the second that lizard saw the crickets hit the ground, he came out no matter if he was sleeping or what. And he went berserk and he'd go flying around, hunting, bouncing off of walls, catching these crickets and ripping them apart as they were struggling. And I got to tell you, being an animal lover myself and a lover of nature, though I would justify it to myself and go, well, That is just the way things go. You know, there's predators and then there's food. I still have to say that it was pretty disturbing to me on a core level having to see that. And when little Billy passed away, there was another time in my life where I had a munchkin who was saying, oh, let's get a lizard, because we had a big empty fish tank. And I thought to myself, no, 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 I can't do that again. Well, reading about this food that's made out of electricity and it makes a powder made me think of that. Maybe they will make us just like lizards someday. Eat crickets with a special protein powder and then go hunting so we don't lose our native instincts. All right. So where do we go from here? There's a couple things. Talking about carbon dioxide, and I don't want to get off. Actually, we should go back to the CRISPRing the human embryo and designer babies before we get too far off the track. See, these lunatics are literally becoming architects of the ecosphere. And they are able to manipulate all different forms of life as well as our atmosphere. And, you know, don't let anyone fool you to say that what is going on in the skies and with our weather and with, quote unquote, climate change, where they mysteriously went back, I don't know, it was a couple hundred thousand, maybe years. They went back a long time period. And they have been saying, up until very recently, that we were entering into a future ice age. Now, call me tinfoil hat wearing, but I have paid attention to that for a very long time because it really interested me that scientists were pointing to the solar cycles as potentially being the cause of a future ice age. And they were looking at geological records and cores that they had taken in places such as Antarctica and places that are remained undisturbed for eons. But they were seriously stating that it potentially was something that was cyclical and that it was coming and that it could be part of the solar cycle. Lo and behold, they had the COP21 meeting in France, if you remember that, right before all the terror attacks started occurring in France and the whole migration invasion of Operation Destabilization. But they had this big COP21 conference and said, holy shit, climate change. If we don't do something, we're all going to die. Got all these countries to sign right on. That's why I had to kind of laugh. Everybody is sort of has their nose out of joint. Any of my lefty friends about Trump not signing onto that agreement. But I have to kind of laugh at that. I mean, I'm not saying that there isn't, quote unquote, climate change because the climate is changing. But I am saying that it is not as potentially how they are rolling out the, quote unquote, official story. Never is it the way they say that the official story is happening. I think it is this live science experiment, and I will have to link to that document that I wasn't supposed to come upon, I don't think, in the notes today. I've linked to it before, but it was something that was published and then pulled off the web and password protected, except good old Google had already made an archived version of it and made that available to anyone who knows where to click in the search results. And I was able to pull that up, and there were some very, very tasty quotes from scientists saying, well, in the past, we could only do these experiments in the lab, but don't worry about it because it's all better now, because now we can actually use our very own environment as the petri dish to see what's going to happen. I think that that petri dish called our environment is what is causing our, stratosphere and our ozone layer to have issues, to become destabilized, to allow potential energies that aren't supposed to be getting through to get through and heat things up. You know, Dane Wigington for a few years now has been talking about these ozone holes and the UVC that is potentially getting through into our lower atmosphere. And UVC, interestingly enough, can get through the water in the ocean and access the, what's it called? Hold on. It's called permafrost. That is at the bottoms of the oceans up in the northern hemisphere. That potentially is a very large carbon sink and a methane sink. Methane is even a bigger greenhouse gas than anything else that we have to worry about. You know, they've been talking about CO2 for a long time, but methane is what heats us up very quickly and makes our atmosphere explosive, remember? Kabang! All right, so wait till you hear this. I ran across this story the other day out of physics.org that talked about some new technology that they are going to use to clean up CO2 emissions. And it could be worth millions! Woohoo! So much for this whole climate change mantra, making the billionaires even richer for those who are investing in these cleanup, quote-unquote, cleanup technologies. Now, I still have to say, put on your thinking caps, because that is something that now, as humans are becoming stupider, aren't doing. And do some logical deduction. Carbon dioxide is a raw material that is used for photosynthesis. We are cutting down millions, if not bazillions, of trees in places such as the rainforests that potentially could be used for wildlife and for growing things. Why would we not just plant bazillions of more trees? Oh, wait, we came across a story a while ago that said more green tends to warm the planet because of the water that it produces. So a greener planet apparently is a much better, and I'm going to kick myself when it comes time to do notes, because these are all kinds of stories that I don't have up right now that I'm going to have to go find. All right, anyway, so I found this story at phys.org, July 19th, 2017. Cleaning up CO2 emissions could be worth millions. Get out your checkbook and get an account on Scottrade. $7 a trade. It's all cheap, and you could buy penny stocks. When most people hear the term CO2 emissions, they probably think of several negative things. And you know why? Because they have trained your brain to connect negative thoughts to carbon dioxide, which is, of course, a greenhouse gas, a pollutant, climate change, political discord, and economic burden. So there's the mantra, greenhouse gas, pollutant, climate change, political discord, and economic burden. Well, apparently, they haven't hammered that mantra home to my head yet, because I didn't think of any of those words off the top of my head when you first mentioned CO2 in this story. Except for greenhouse gas, and that's because that's what I have read. But I'm saying question that. But a team of researchers led by Stuart Licht, a chemistry professor at George Washington University, has a vision for making bazillions of dollars by transforming CO2 emissions from a pollutant, of course, into a valuable resource, all while making a potentially large net profit. Now, wait till you guys hear this. This is what sets off my bullshit detector. Beep, 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 beep. Because as they are touting, there's this brand new way to create food with carbon dioxide, which, of course, happens to be a greenhouse gas, so they say, and a byproduct of breathing and living. And a raw material for growing green organisms such as food and crops. It's got to make you wonder where the ethics of coming up with this newfangled technology to save the planet and to combat quote-unquote climate change, which in my mind is still in question. And like I said, it's not whether or not the climate is changing, because I agree the climate is changing, but who is responsible and how and for what purpose? Whether or not is you breathing that is causing crisis? Because I would say bullshit. but who is going to profit? Is it going to be you? They suck up all the CO2 so you can no longer grow crops. Are you going to get CO2 credits, cubits, to be able to pay for a few little sippy cups of CO2 to make your green plants thrive and grow? So you could have heritage human 1.0 food for your children and your grandchildren to grow into proper human organisms the way we once were. Are you going to become a renegade because you produce CO2 somehow through some process? Maybe you learn about how to create microbes that produce CO2, like fermentation. Isn't CO2 part of fermentation to make it bubbly? Maybe having your own beer cask and hops. And what's the other thing they grow? They grow hops and barley. I really want to become a beer farmer. That would be fun for me. But, you know, doing stuff like that may allow you to grow cucumbers and tomatoes as you create your own little biosphere. And I don't know, I'm just going off on a tangent now. But, you know, it could be true. Could be true. I put on my little sci-fi thinking cap and think about all the possible permutations that this current trajectory could send us on. It's pretty horrifying. I mean, everything that we know and love and all the ways that our grandparents and great-grandparents survived on this planet, great-great-great-grandparents and beyond, you know, could be at risk right now with some of the things that they are tinkering with and striving to become architects of all living life and environments on this planet. So back to the CO2 capture technology that can make millions. In a new study published in Materials Today Energy, these researchers have shown that they could use CO2 and solar thermal energy to produce high yields of the millimeter length carbon nanotubes, and then turn that into a wool at a cost of just $660 a ton. So by capturing CO2 and utilizing solar power, Elon Musk, they could turn CO2 into carbon nanotube wool at just $660 a ton. The market value of carbon nanotube wool like these, which then can be woven into textiles to make metals, cement replacements, as well as other materials. To sell that is currently $100,000 to $400,000 a ton. So it costs them $660 a ton, and they literally can make $400,000 a ton just by capturing free CO2 and then utilizing solar energy to produce this. I don't have a calculator in front of me, and I didn't do the math, but I could say just by looking at how many zeros difference there is, that's a bazillion dollars, literally, utilizing things that right now are endless: solar energy and CO2 on this planet, two things that are required to survive for most of life and required to grow food. How ingenious is this? Wait, what was his name? Stuart Licht? You are an evil, evil scientific genius. I bet people are clamoring to get on his schedule. We have introduced a new class of materials called carbon nanotube wool, which are the first carbon nanotube technologies that can be directly woven into a cloth, as they are of macroscopic length and are very cheap to produce. The sole reactant to reproduce these wools is the greenhouse gas, carbon dioxide. Oh, don't you think people like, what was his name? He looked like the Penguin. Oh, God, I'm having a brain fart. Evil genius. Used to be part of the Department of Energy. What was that company? The ones that worked on the Gulf oil spill. Dick Cheney. People like Dick Cheney are probably snickering right now. thinking how friggin' stupid we are. If we jump on this bandwagon all in the name of making the planet whole again and fixing this runaway carbon climate change and giving some rich tech billionaire the ability to make bazillions and bazillions of dollars by mining natural resources that are required for life on this planet. Like, I just couldn't even get over this. Researchers hope that this new technology, which is called C2CNT, will offer an indisputable economic incentive, yes, to remove excess CO2 from the atmosphere. I'm sure Bill Gates is probably all over this shit. And to calculate that, if they were to set up a solar thermal station over an area equal to 4% of the Sahara Desert, so let's get all of the Saudis on board, they could reduce the CO2 concentration of the atmosphere back to what it was in pre-industrial levels in just the next 10 years. They note that a more realistic implementation would be to set up stations all over the oceans, where they have water, where there is more available surface area. And this new study builds on the scientists' previous research going back to 2010 when they first proposed the idea of solar thermal electrochemical processes called STEP, in which solar energy is used to power an electrolytic cell. The cell captures and breaks down atmospheric CO2 into carbon or carbon monoxide and oxygen, and the carbon byproduct can then be used to synthesize various products such as, methane. Why would they be producing methane? Maybe to burn it as a gas, which is, of course, a real greenhouse gas, as well as syngas, which I don't know what that is, and ammonia, which is another thing that is toxic. Although useful, these products are valued at only around $100 a ton because they have to then pay the EPA to get rid of them properly. So they are not nearly as valuable as CNTs. Synthesizing CNT from CO2 emissions has proved to be more challenging, with some earlier research suggesting that it may be impossible to produce CNTs by electrolysis using molten lithium carbonate, which I would have to guess is probably not very healthy for the environment either, and which is the compound used in the STEP process to nucleate the growth of carbon products. However, in 2015, Leakt and his team demonstrated for the very first time the feasibility of high-yield, low-energy electrolytic splitting of CO2 into CNTs, which uses an alternative growth mechanism for molten lithium carbonate. One drawback of that process, however, is that the CNTs produce a nanometer sized, which is less than 100 micrometers long, which is then too short to be woven into textiles. But the main result of this new study is that CNTs are 100 times longer, which is achieved by replacing copper or steel cathodes on the electrolytic cell with mono, which is a type of nickel copper alloy. By making this change and carefully tuning other parameters, the researchers produced CNTs with a diameter of more than 1 micrometer in length and more than 1 millimeter, which is, they point out, raises the question on whether or not CNTs should actually be classified as nanomaterials. And in any case, this wool-like CNT is now long enough to be woven into textiles for various applications. Well, zingo, because now this technology is ready for prime time. That's what all that gobbledygook just meant. Inexpensive, weavable CNT wools are preferred replacements for conventional steel and aluminum applications due to the CNT wool's lightweight and strength to mass advantage. In addition to textiles, CNT wools serve as preferred additives to formulate blast and fracture resistant cement and ceramics. And I'm going to guess that they're going to be using some of this for space travel, would be a thought of mine. One of the top ceramic universities in the world happens to be right here in upstate New York. I didn't know that until just recently when I was looking at a few different places and what their specialties were. Other applications of stronger than steel, highly conductive CNT cloth are bulletproof CNT suits and taser-proof suits as well. So there you have it. They can use carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere to make bazillions of dollars and then profit highly from it. So, okay, let's get back to this human CRISPR. So we're keeping up with the Joneses in China because Chinese scientists have already, we just found out, CRISPRed human embryos three different times. We had only read about two. But now in Oregon, in Portland, they believe that they have broken new ground, both in the number of embryos experimented upon and by demonstrating that it is possible to safely and efficiently correct defective genes that cause inherited diseases. Now, although none of the embryos were allowed to develop for more than a few days, there was never an intention of implanting them into a womb. And like I said, if you don't believe me, look up artificial womb, because they've been experimenting with that with some of these animal-human hybrids to grow organs and things of that nature. So who's to say that down some deep, dark hallway that they haven't already been doing some of that? And of course, just like technology equipment, that after you've depreciated it, you can mark it as destroyed and write it off on your taxes as a business. Provide the serial numbers while very quietly selling them to employees for some reduced rate. So even though you've told the authorities you've destroyed it, you maybe haven't. I've seen that happen in the corporate world. Who's to say that they're not doing some of that same stuff here? Like, okay, little Johnny scientist, you created this genetically modified embryo that, wink, we just told the FDA we destroyed. But you have an artificial womb in your lab under the table, under lock and key. And maybe, just maybe, if we don't write a paper on this, you could just take that and put it in your little artificial womb and promise me, just promise me, that when it starts to grow eyes and blood and hair, that you'll do away with it ethically. Well, maybe, just so we could see for, you know, research purposes what happens. You could transplant this and then pay very close attention to it. And don't let it get out of hand, you know. And then tell all the authorities, yes, it's been, wink, destroyed. Well, in the meantime, you got two or three of these things that you're just doing just for, you know, Frankenstein purposes. I'm just saying, there was a story, there was a wiki, actually, that I closed this morning to save memory, so I didn't have a tab crash with all the stuff I had open, but there's a Wikipedia on unethical human experimentation out there that you can go through and look through all the unethical experiments that they have done without consent to humans over the last hundred or few hundred years that, to be quite frank, were quite horrifying. So now to take this the very next step in the homeland, to be CRISPRing humans and then find out Georgie Porgy Church and some of the scientists at MIT have already been humanizing things such as pig embryos in the name of growing transplanted organs that aren't supposed to be rejected. You got to be a little concerned. You know, then we find out Georgie Porgy Church was one of the first scientists to completely re-engineer an E. coli. And they've been creating designer bacteria that can go in and be living therapeutics in your gut to make you healthy, to make you a better human. You have to wonder where this is going to lead to for our kids. You have to kind of wonder what therapeutic isn't going to actually be some sort of human experimentation that as they sell this to you and me and Nana and Johnny as some sort of ability to cure you. Remember, science is becoming a very competitive field where We have doctors from different hospitals and institutions that are tied to different universities. Trust me, I'm going through all this right now. That are all competing for the same research dollars that places such as the National Institute of Health are giving out, that don't want to share your health information from one university hospital to another because they're afraid that some of the things that they may have learned utilizing you as their guinea pig might translate into a discovery for some of the smarty pants doctors at the other university hospital that you want to go to that has better doctors and that might happen to be closer to home, all in the name of not sharing their mad science developments, and all in the name of wanting to compete for those mad science research dollars. Guys, I'm telling you, this is setting up an arms race that is arming itself with how to manipulate life at a DNA level, at the most basic levels of what makes things alive, to be able to then utilize those to make bazillions of dollars and to sell it to you as a cure for things that ail you. But step right up, get your genetic profile so we can better diagnose you. They want to be able to correct defective genes and inherited diseases. Now I'm facing this very thing right now. I get to go to the hematologist tomorrow, so I won't be live tomorrow. But what they're going to start looking at are some of the things that my blood does. And I have a bad feeling that some of these might be genetic, looking at my family history. So what am I going to be? Am I going to be an early CRISPR candidate to try and correct a few of these things? I don't think so. But, you know, what else is there? If you have problems that are health issues that they can trace back to being genetic defects, and I'm sure most of us have them. Some of our genetic defects maybe don't ever show up, but sometimes, just sometimes, environmental factors, even stresses, even things that you eat or environments that you live in, might be that one little straw that broke the camel's back and flipped a switch somewhere that made a genetic disease that up until very recently never had any manifestation to turn on, bink, and maybe start producing some substance that then causes a cascade of events in your body that could then cause end results that you're not happy with and that nobody knows how to fix. Well, although none of these embryos were allowed, they say, to develop for more than a few days, wink, there was never any intention, of course, of implanting them into a human womb. These experiments are milestones on what may prove to be an inevitable journey toward the birth of the first genetically modified human. This would be H+, or whatever they want to call it, the alpha generation. In altering the DNA code of human embryos, the objective of scientists is to show that they can eradicate or, quote-unquote, correct genes that cause inherited diseases, like the blood condition, beta thalassemia. That's what's interesting. They're going to be looking to me for some blood conditions that are potentially inherited. I don't like this. The process is termed germline engineering. We've talked about that at length before. Because this would be some sort of genetic change that can be passed down through your lineage. And because any genetically modified child would then pass down the changes onto subsequent generations via their own germ cells, which would be their egg and their sperm. Some critics say germline experimentation could open the door to floodgates to a brave new world of quote-unquote designer babies engineered with genetic enhancements like making them less stupid. A prospect bitterly opposed by a range of religious organizations and tinfoil hat wearing lunatics like Jewel. I think this is the wrong path to be taking. In the U.S. intelligence community, we talked about this. Clapper had come out in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee and told them that CRISPR and genetically engineering in general was a WMD. The U.S. intelligence community last year called CRISPR a potential, quote unquote, weapon of mass destruction. And when you look at this technology war that is going on between places such as the United States, China, and Russia, and all this bio warfare and bioengineering and autonomous robots and artificial intelligence, you have to realize very quickly that this isn't a good thing to be doing. This is literally destabilizing the foundations of life from every aspect. You know, they are able to rewrite the world in their own image, and it maybe isn't in the image that you want, but in their own image without any type of human consent to see if they could better us. And they are the ones who are making the definition of what is better, of what is perfect. And it leads eventually to you and I and our children and our germlines is being deemed defective. This is where we got to worry. Once we have certain groups of people deeming other groups of people as genetically defective, what happens to those germlines? Are they voted on as being detrimental to the future of all humans if they are allowed to reproduce? And this is what it comes down to. People laugh at like this whole eugenics plan. But I'm telling you, it will be a eugenics plan when you and Nana, and though Nana isn't going to be reproducing too much, but your germline is deemed to cost too much for health care and for sustaining the diseases that your lineage passes down. Will you be allowed to procreate and to add to the gene pool if there is no benefits, according to Watson? Watson's going to take a look at your he's going to run a virtual scenario of your gene line being allowed to reproduce, and he's going to come to the conclusion that you're worth less than what you could produce in cubits or whatever. You eat more than you're worth there, Johnny. So I hate to tell you, you've been voted off the island. And you know, here's the disturbing thing with that little statement. Our generation of children is being groomed by this mindless television that, you know, reality television and voting people off the island and kind of deploying a scenario such as this book that I've talked about a couple times before that I read as a kid called The Lottery, where at a certain age you had to pull a ticket, and if you pulled the ticket, you were deemed expendable. All in the name of keeping the community healthier and happier because they would now have more resources. He was literally voted off the island. Well, who's to say that it isn't what the future AI overlords aren't going to decide for your lineage because you have been deemed defective because you have some genetic blood disease. It's going to cost too much to take care of you. So we're either going to have to bloop edit you or bloop decommission you. That's what it's all going to end as. So anyway, the colleagues with this genetically engineered embryo are said to have convincingly shown that it's possible to avoid off-target effects of CRISPRing, as CRISPR errors are known. A person familiar with the research says many tens of human IVF, and that would be in vitro fertilization embryos, were created for the experiment using donated sperm of men carrying inherited disease mutations. Embryos at this stage are tiny clumps of cells invisible to the naked eye, and they could not, MIT Technology Review, could not determine which disease genes had been chosen for editing. So apparently that's a secret. But it is proof of principle that it can work. They say they significantly reduced the mosaicism, which is the mutation. And I don't think it is a start of clinical trials just yet. Well, phew, but it does take it further than anyone else has been before, said a scientist familiar with the project. This group appears to overcome earlier difficulties by getting in early and injecting CRISPR into the eggs at the same time that they were fertilized with the sperm. That concept is similar to one tested in mice by Tony Perry of Bath University. Perry successfully added the gene of a mouse for coat color, so like hair color, because that's going to be where the money is, changing the fur of the offspring from the expected brown to white. And somewhat prophetically, Perry's paper on the research published at the end of 2014 said this or analogous approaches may one day enable human genome targeting or editing during very early development. Born in Kazakhstan when it was part of the former Soviet Union, Malaptov, and this is the scientist in Oregon, has for years pushed scientific boundaries. In 2007, he unveiled the world's first cloned monkey. That's great. And then in 2013, he created human embryos through cloning as a way of creating patient-specific stem cells. Ding, ding, ding. Oh, sorry, patient-specific stem cells. So where did he come from? Was he doing this in the Soviet Union? Was he part of a project that was part of their bioengineering? I don't know. But his team's move into embryo editing coincides with a report of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences in February that it was widely seen as providing a green light for lab research on germline modification. And we covered that in February. There was a green light because it was happening in China and the UK. So now someone here just has to start tinkering with it. The advisory committee drew a red line on genetic enhancements, and we covered this. And that was on germline editing, and that would be editing of things that could be passed down, like genetic enhancements for higher intelligence. But genome editing to enhance traits or abilities beyond ordinary health raises concerns about whether the benefits can outweigh the risk and about the fairness if available only to some people like the rich tech billionaires, says Alta Caro, co-chair of NASA's study committee. Oh, sorry, NAS's, which would be the National Academy of Sciences Study Committee, and professor of law and bioethics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In the U.S., any effort to turn an edited IVF embryo into a baby has been blocked by Congress, which added language to the Food and Drug Administration's funding bill forbidding approval for clinical trials. All right, guys, I'll catch up with you on Wednesday.